Welcome to another episode of the Inappropriate Growth Podcast. We have a great one for you today. I am thrilled to have Richard Blank, a visionary leader whose life story kind of reads like an adventure novel. At the young age of 27, Richard embarked on a life-changing journey to Costa Rica, a beautiful place where he would leave his mark on the call center industry. Over multiple decades, he's trained over 10,000 bilingual telemarketers. He infuses his motivational public speaking prowess with tactful and effective communication strategies. Richard's influence extends beyond the office walls. He is the proud owner of the largest collection of restored American pinball machines and antique Rockola jukeboxes in Central America. Wow. But by integrating gamification into the very fabric of his company's culture, Costa Rica's call center, a company he has led as CEO since 2008, things have boomed. A graduate of the University of Arizona with degrees in communication and Spanish, Richard is also a certified language expert from the University of Sevilla, Spain. His academic achievements are just as impressive as his professional ones. A 2023 inductee to the Hall of Fame for Business, Richard continues to support future generations by endowing a scholarship for students pursuing a major in world languages. Join us as we step up our communication skills and dive into the mind of a man who has not only witnessed growth, but has been a catalyst for it. Richard Blank is a legend, and we've got him here on the Inappropriate Growth Podcast. I know you're going to enjoy this one, so let's get started. Welcome to Inappropriate Growth, the podcast where we get real about the grind behind the glory. I'm Paul, your host, and I'm here to take you on a journey through the untold stories of business triumphs. We might raise some eyebrows, but it's all about the hustle and we don't fit the mold. Here we're talking about the kind of effort that doesn't just push the envelope, it shreds it to pieces. We're building a community where the norm is to defy norms. So buckle up, because we're diving deep into the beginnings that were anything but humble, the times when giving up seemed like the only option. We'll also dig into all of those wild, insane, and out-of-the-box strategies that led to massive growth. From growth hacks to best practices, this podcast will be fast, furious, and should be a whole lot of fun. Join us as we redefine what it means to grow and turn business growth into an art form. Welcome to Inappropriate Growth. All right. And it's Richard Blank, right? I'm pronouncing it.
Like a blank check.
Okay. All right, everyone. Welcome to the Inappropriate Growth Podcast. This is episode 6. We are on a roll. And today we are welcoming Mr. Richard Blank all the way from Costa Rica.
Well, Paul, first, I can't thank you enough for being here. I'm a happy guest, but I've had a very, very happy 24 years living here in Costa Rica.
Awesome. I've seen pictures. It's a beautiful place. And it's on my bucket list. I'll definitely get down there. And now I've got a contact. Just for the benefit of our guests, let us know exactly. We know you're in Costa Rica, but where are you? How did you get there? And what do you do?
Well, for your Inappropriate Growth Podcast audience, I'm originally from Northeast Philly. And instead of following in the certain footsteps of my great-grandfather and my parents and grandparents that went to Ivy League and studied law and finance, I wanted to be a language major. So after graduating the proud Abington, I went to the University of Arizona and doubled down. And post-grad, I was able to move to Costa Rica at the age of 27 and work at a friend's call center. And I kind of saw that more as my graduate school. I was there for 4 years and learned the interworkings of a center minus C level. And so in my mid-30s, when I was having that midlife crisis and time was a ticking, I decided to throw my hat in the ring and try it out. And the next thing you know, we're celebrating our 16th year as Costa Rica's call center.
It kind of dovetails right into my first question. It's about early beginnings and inappropriate growth. We're usually very interested in the humble beginnings. It's usually, I personally work with people that are going into business for themselves, and they've been maybe in a corporate setting prior. And I really kind of question their motives, because sometimes brand new entrepreneurs
aren't coming at it with a realistic expectation. They want to be their own boss and have some more flexibility, and because they've got a friend who's owned their own business maybe for 20 years and very flexible in their schedule. Like, yeah, but you might be comparing your chapter one to their happily ever after. I'm more interested in that chapter one. What was it like, you know, when maybe you questioned what your decision was, maybe where you said maybe this wasn't a good idea, but what inspired you to move to Costa Rica? I know you said you went there and worked in a call center, but to be in Costa Rica on purpose, I mean, train, when I saw over 500 employees for one of the largest call centers in Central America, what do you think was the biggest inspiration for that result?
Well, you're seeing the end result there. Let me go as far back as middle school.
All right.
When I was in my early teens, I came from a nice family that liked to take vacations. So sometimes we'd go to Mexico. So besides enjoying myself in the sun, I could come back with 20 to 30 new vocabulary words. But here's the skinny. My family had certain expectations, scholastically and what you're going to do with your career.
Right.
And for me, I couldn't get that reinforcement from them because they didn't speak Spanish. The only way I can get it was outside of my bubble of friends and family, that no one was interested in the second language. And so when I met somebody from the Latin community, I would speak the Spanish that I would know, and I would get such encouragement, additional vocabulary, a little adjustment on the grammar, and not just a pat on the head, wind in the sails. So it really just wasn't a parlor trick, and my parents thought it was just a hobby that would get old and sit in some garage somewhere. I was doing the dedicated practice, like Daniel's son, so he could beat Johnny. I mean, when you see somebody go above and beyond, over and above school on their weekends, evenings, finding other mediums to do it, like reading, watching movies, writing, meeting people, you can't hold back someone's spark. So then it came to high school. Okay, fine. I got my dedicated Spanish teacher that really invested in me, kind of like other teachers do with the special kid. And my grades were terrible. So fortunately, I got a college recommendation from this individual that really believed in me, plus the late principal Norman Schmidt, that got me into Arizona for their language program. How did I convince my parents not to go to Ivy League or study law or medicine? I mentioned my great grandparents. I came over at the turn of the 20th that did not speak English and moved to New York, was in the garment industry. We made our money during the Depression. It's in our blood. We're nomads. And without great grandpa, you wouldn't be here today making decisions on this. So think about what happened when he moved from Romania and Russia. Right. And so you can't hold us back. And I tell you what, let me roll the dice. I'll come back with my tail between my legs if I made the bad decision. But if I make the right decision, you have to let me run. And so I did invest those years at Arizona, but then I did the other thing. I went above and beyond. I interned for Telemundo for 2 years. I was able to get into this organization on my own free time, 20 hours a week. And I did promotions and public relations. I also had the chance to meet some individuals like Pedro Sefcak and Miguel Quintana, which were huge influences back in the mid 90s on that television station. And they, my friend, said, go, Richard, go. I like your Spanish. I like where you're going. So it also led into moving to Costa Rica. That barn door was open. The momentum was there. I didn't have to sell my family. It was already happening. And so when I came to Costa Rica, I had the momentum. I had the advanced intermediate Spanish, which now becomes advanced. And so I married a Costa Rican, fell in love, enjoyed working at the center because it's a linguistic environment.
Right.
And I saw not what you see in Hollywood, where it's the cold call close and the Wolf of Wall Street and coffees for closers, Blake. These were bilingual individuals getting an ROI. And now, mind you, a second language bears the mark of higher education, and an accent to me is a beauty mark. Look at Ricardo Montalban from Fantasy Island. And so I was watching the most engaged artists of speech, and I gravitated towards it. And sometimes in your life, you do see the Wu Wei. There is no resistance. And not only did I jump into it, but the moment I got on the phone, never working at a call center before, I was cranking homers. My talk time was long. I'm converting calls. I'm high-fiving people on the phone, just like the movies, but I just wasn't slinging stock. But the thing was, I saw the artist's speech. I understood the thesaurus. I got to listen to the calls in QA. I saw their grading system. I saw the inner workings of structure, of rhetoric, and how it could be repeated and grown. The only thing was keeping that motivation high and not letting that morale drop. And I know I'm going off on tangents, but the one last thing I will say, that the $1 million piece of advice that I got growing up was the empathy. If you can extend compassion towards people that are walking in uncomfortable shoes, you will earn the respect and the stripes of your colleagues around you. And so I earn this by merit. People know that this is my wheelhouse and I'm paying it forward. And so that is why I'm able to grow to 150 being 16 years, because my goodness, I have soldiers that are willing to walk with me and I'm a guest in their country. I'm 3,000 miles away from my mama. And this thing still hasn't stopped. So these entrepreneurs in the beginning, you sometimes have to take leaps of faith. If you train hard enough, you will win the fight, but you haven't stepped in the ring yet. Doesn't matter. You hit that training and you give yourself that discipline and you do not listen to the naysayers and great believers. They love you. They just don't understand you. And so a lot of the times, my good friend, Paul, you got to hold the course, even if you walk alone. And so look at this. None of my friends from Abington could ever imagine moving to Costa Rica and starting a call center. I didn't even know what a call center was. And so sometimes you have to zig and zag and write your own history. That's all.
Well, that really, I don't want to say it answers, but it does kind of segue what my second question was. And it was about leadership style. It was about the fact, I know that you're known for your motivational speaking, public speaking style. I'm picking that up already. But I'm wondering if the linguistic and the focus and the intentionality of, you know, being strategic about forming what it is you're going to say. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering about that approach and how is it influencing the culture at the call center, or is Costa Rica's influencing the style? Like I'm kind of feeling like it's influencing you and then you're influencing it back. And is there something going on like that there?
Of course there is. What do we have in common? The interest in the language and the fact that I have the English, they have the Spanish, and we go together. But I start off with the psychology first. Let's do the armor. Then we do the shield. Then we do the sword. I'm not handing them anything yet until I can get them in the right frame of mind. They might have the vigor, they just don't have the stamina. So I have to let them know that fear is, it doesn't make sense, because learning a second language is 10 times harder than any campaign I'm gonna put you on. And most people today are doing omni-channel non-voice with texting and emails while you are still doing a painting, not a print. Oh, what a beautiful speech to do. It has more value. You can really get the response of the people and there's no misinterpretation. And if you want to get business-like, you can upsell, you can referral, right? You can be able to get that exit interview.
You're creating a relationship. It's not an AI.
Of course. You're really lessening the power of the contact by doing that. It's so informal. But then when you talk about the thesaurus and you give them certain words that will assist them, like removing help and using words like, you know, assist, guide, and lend a hand, I'm allowing them the chance to choose their own adventure of more strategic and diplomatic vocabulary. Why? Because brick walls and rabbit holes suck. It ruins your time, it ruins your rhythm, and can kill a call. So why would you even potentially choose something that is bitter, or could that throw somebody off? My language is not flowery, but it's in a certain sort of way where it's assertive enough to move forward at a good pace and a very nice tone. We discuss adjustments of tone. I say that the best combination is empathetic and, you know, you got to be strategic where you're confident and empathetic. And I give the examples of doctors, attorneys, parents, and best friends. And but what about the mirror imaging technique is what you always talk about. You've learned that in sales. Well, you don't want to mirror image negativity. In my mind, you should be mirror imaging their rate of speech and their pitch. Why? Yeah. So you can see if they do a spike or a dip. Why? That's a time to see the inconsistencies, to ask for tie down questions. clarity questions. If things make sense or sounds good, may we move forward? And so it's an excellent way to have checkpoints, 30 seconds to 2 minutes. So instead of having a rambling 10-minute call that fails, you can have a solid 7-minute call, shave 3 minutes, and close the deal. And so I'm trying to teach them to be more in the moment and using some of what people say that could eventually, instead of horizontal, now we're vertically asking open-ended questions, because instead of talking about business and hiring you as an amazing business coach, my good friend, Paul, we might want to talk about Louisiana, and we want to talk about you taking amazing photographs and the fact that you did it from passion, and what you experience is $1 million compared to what they were paying you. You should have almost paid them what they paid you to have that experience. And so just that alone, and showing not only just interest in topic, but second, third, and fourth follow-up questions for depth. What anchoring that we're doing, what bonding that we're doing. And then hypothetically, if I speak to a gatekeeper or secretary that transfers the call to you, I'm going to let you know how amazing Catherine was. I'm going to do it verbally. I'm also going to do it in writing and give these positive escalations. Separate myself from the thousands that are pitching your business by showing you authenticity and really letting you know that the people that work with you are the most amazing people. So you can choose me just in regards to my ethics prior to any sort of contracts. And happen if I have to call your company back, you know, then Catherine's going to give me a hero's welcome. She's also going to tell me a couple of goodies on Paul's schedule. So you don't need to do it by hook or by crook, or you don't need to find ways to angle your way in there. If you do things ethically, like telling the truth, you can tell the same story 1,000 times. And trust me, Catherine gets 1,000 phone calls a day. She'll remember you.
And that's
beautiful to do business.
That the whole empathy and strategic and being very intentional about how you're speaking, right? When you're intentional about what you're doing, it's a focus on your speech, but it's an improvement in your hearing, because you're starting to hear. It's like when you have a meeting with a potential client. You know, when I was in sales, I always used to say, whoever has the best agenda wins, and whoever is the most prepared, whoever has anticipated things better. You know, because early on in a negotiation, you're going to have pushing and pulling that's really not relevant to anybody's goal with the conversation, but it's just trying to establish parameters. But by being strategic and having a longer, more thought out process, I mean, to the depth that you're describing, listening for the pauses and listening for the increases in tone, and you're going to have the best agenda if you're that well prepared, because you've already been through the war of learning a second language. And I'm speaking as you would be speaking to maybe your team. You've already done that. What can't you do? And you mentioned automation or chat bots and stuff. And I'm curious, you know, the call center industry, it's hard for me when people say the early 2000s, I think that, you know, was very recently, but I'm forced to realize that was over 20 years ago. But a lot has changed in 20 years in that space. What are the most significant changes you've witnessed, and how have you had to adapt, would you say?
No, work from home definitely made a difference. It kind of ruined the synergy of what you have on site, especially since I have a great arcade with pinball machines and Pac-Man. Additionally, you were mentioning styles of clothes. I'm okay with that. You want to go back 1,000 years on how people used to dress? Fine. Even go back to the togas. But guess what was the same? Technology changed and clothing and fashion and architecture changed. What was the same? A hug, a smile, right? Touching, haptics, spacing, giving of food. And so my strongest argument against AI, they can carry 90% of everything. But when it comes to the empathy, right? When you're speaking to a doctor, an attorney, a best friend, you can't cry on an AI's shoulder. And an AI can't tell you that they understand where you're coming from if your puppy runs away. So that sort of authenticity will never hit You can make my burger faster. You can make it easier. Bing, bang, boomages. But that 10 minutes that I really needed a real individual where I'm stripped bare emotionally, I need to speak to Paul. I'm going to press zero because I want to speak to my friend who earned my business, who adjusted the contract to let me make a payment one time if I had to, called me back because there was a problem with something ABC. The guy that's earning my business, where I'm not in some queue, I'm not getting an email back, it's not latent. And the one time I needed that favor, even as I say that, shoulder to cry, because I'm having a weird day, and my stranger now became my best friend. So I think people love their dogs and cats and hug them. They can't even speak English. I will say that there will not be a niche market, but there will be people like you and I that love paintings and live theater or certain things that are a home-cooked meal. And if that's what it is, and if that's a luxury, then so be it. But I think a lot of people are going to get sick of very cold and stiff metal benches. They prefer to be in some luxury thing to sit down, you know, with the comforts of home.
You're talking to someone who grew up in the city. I was a city kid, made fun of people from the country. 10 years ago, I met my wife, and she's absolutely from the country. But I'm looking at things from a different perspective. I don't eat fast food anymore. That was, when you live in the city, this, the convenience overrides the knowledge that you it overrides the knowledge that you know it's not good for you. You know, but it's just so easy. And the same thing with AI. It's so easy. Spell check made us all terrible spellers when we weren't before. I think AI is going to just make us dumber. And I don't necessarily hate that because I'm not dependent on it. And it's just, I'm not going to have to improve myself a lot to separate myself from people I might be competing with. I kind of feel that vibe that you're saying is we're not changing. The technology can change all at once.
The other bit of strategy that I forgot to mention earlier is the luxury of time. If I'm making quick phone calls, that's like quick fighting. You're doing some jabs and in there. But if you can play long game, it is time. You said there's certain conversations where people are just overly aggressive. You're on the wrong page. My suggestion is just take as many notes as possible, thanking them for their time and just saying, may I go to the gym on it, sleep on it, work on it? Because I've seen, and this is the maturity of being a business owner, okay? The following day, I'm willing to accept the fact I overextended myself. Maybe I need to readjust the tone. I can cut the fat, see the priority, see your side. And my success rate, given luxury of time, has been about 80%. Some people don't budge.
Well, I relate. Yeah. When I first started talking to you, I record all my calls because I don't trust my memory of what happened. And
that's a good point.
But once you start seeing an actual recording of it, just like in a call center, is for training purposes, right? We're recording calls all the time. You point out to someone who's being trained, this is what you said. It's just like financial reports. We can embellish or, you know, tweak the statistics to fit our narrative and just about anything, but we can't dispute, well, they used to call it videotape, but now it's just, we can't dispute video recorded evidence and we can't dispute numbers. They don't lie. And I think that's helped me do what you're talking about because it's a lot easier to reflect when you're faced with the reality of what you did and you said, and then your remembrances of things start getting more accurate because, oh, I thought I said this. Like, that is not what I said. I'm listening to what I said. It's not what I thought. Well, that gap kind of closes a little bit when you realize it. And it's that maturity. Maturity is not that you figured everything out. Maturity is that you have this awareness, or I believe this, you have the awareness that there's more stuff to figure out.
So you're training people, right? And you have these recordings. I use the Philly technique. In fact, we do the Philly guilt technique. And so, yo, Paul, you know you're better than that. Come on, I heard you last week, you did 44. And so a lot of the times when the calls are being made, I'll pause it. I'll look at you and I'll just, you know, make the face and go, I know, Richard, I did this, this, and this. I go, Okay, and then we keep moving forward. And so self-analysis is definitely good for self-improvement. Yes, it is their own voice. And I get disappointed more than I do angry. So I'll never give you the walk of shame. I'll never make you cry. But you're definitely better than that. I know you can do things. You just weren't focused at the moment. And guess what, my man? There are certain things that happen outside of the office, which may affect their performance here. So I do have to take their responsibilities into consideration.
Well, you've earned a reputation, right? With this training and teaching it as basically a school for telemarketing, right? Is that fair?
Yes, but some people say that my training may be too intense from time to time. But as Blake said in Glengarry Glen Ross, if you can't take me, how are you going to take being on a sit? I'm not saying that I look at it like this. I bend, but I don't break. And my rhetoric is really just practicing rebuttals with you. My rhetoric is asking you, okay, is this too tough for you, Paul? Let's pretend Paul's coming in for the first day. You judge me, my man. So before you even go into a training class, I bring you into the arcade so you can play some pinball and Pac-Man and some air hockey. So at least you're chilling for the first half of the people in mid. That's number one. Number two, you come into the training. There's no quiz. Consider me like the TV VCR. You know, there's no quiz. You get to enjoy yourself for that class that day. All I'm going to do is pay it forward and teach you soft skills that got me there. But these are the sort of things you just don't pick up a guitar in one day. I'm talking about 30 years worth of this knowledge that I'm trying to condense in 2 hours to show you the bouncy ball kindergarten way to do it. Where I can show you, come and don't do the fish in a day and teaching you for life. I am giving you the foundation of speaking structure, where after 2 to 3 weeks, then it becomes habit. And these are very simple common sense suggestions that I'm making people to make them more confident, self-reliant, and have more stability and make stronger arguments. And really using
people. It's a safe assumption that works. That's what, I mean, that's the core principles at the beginning. It's the first thing you said when we started talking. It's clearly your first phase, and it's clearly intentional. And you wouldn't have this business this size, this successful, if that didn't work.
Well, let's even get to there. I'll look at you and I go, Paul, let me ask you a quick question. How many owners of a call center have taken the time not just introduce themselves to you, but actually took a couple hours to share ideas with you? Very rarely someone will raise their hand, and I'm not doing that to put another medal on my jacket. I'm trying to establish the fact that you're getting that sort of respect. You're meeting an owner. I'm a busy man, but I also know my business. I'm not thousands. I'm 150. So I can take the time in the final filtration process to see if we mesh and if we can spend 2 hours together and do things the old school way. Old school, Nerf football, wiffle ball, capture the flag way. That's my way. And I'm going to have a great class with you where it's entertaining. You're going to feel good about yourself. I'm going to teach you my Philly. And that's how we, let me also add, while I'm working with you and role playing, I may ask you, Paul, to stand up. Why? It's another level to break, another skin to shed. Get up in front of the 10 people. And with your boss, role play with me. If you have the guts to do that, all right, John Wayne, then die with your boots on, brother. Look what you just did today. Role playing, speaking, script in left hand, using the right hand for illustrators, looking in my eye, pacing around in front of 7 cats you don't even know, but you're rolling with it. You're showing, you're swinging. I love that. I can train someone like that. I like that sort of stuff. And so that's where I build my Dirty Dozen. You need to break bread with me, play pinball with me, and allow me to pass this electromagnetic energy to you. And if you do not receive it, then unfortunately it's right bus, but wrong seat. You're in the wrong place. And so I have the luxury to be able to choose.
Okay. Well, shifting gears a little bit. I'm sure you've seen, I mean, and I'm not just talking about changes in the industry. What do you think about the future of this business, your business, the call center, a vision for the future? Like, is there a 5-year plan going forward, or you want everything to be exactly the same? And if there is a plan, what's the plan to achieve the plan?
There will be more people working from home. I have the luxury of hiring people from further distances. The people that will be in the center will be onboarding and PCI compliance. And it'll almost be like a ghost town. What a nice 50s cafe I built. And I brought in the games. I even, as I mentioned, air hockey table. Who has air hockey tables? Well, pre-COVID, those places were packed. People were in that room laughing and having fun. Less cigarettes, less in the corner on Instagram, more best friends. I had people meet, fall in love, get married, and have kids. And how are they doing this? Because
wear pants every single day.
But it's the medium, my friend. It gave people a chance to meet individuals from other departments.
Right.
And to be able to compete with people, even myself, and have fun and let off steam. And so just because we're adults, we can't play and have recess. No way. Not in my center.
I've seen both sides of the, because COVID changed the dynamic. I mean, you can have a conversation on Zoom or on FaceTime or on a telephone or via text, but if you need a person, they're just not there. And playing, the interacting, the camaraderie is not just the work.
So we make 100 phone calls, right? Regardless of transportation, time, and money spent. It's just 100 in the office and 100 work from home. Richard and Paul. Oh, man, if I had to be a betting man, I would minimum bet and throw it all down at least a 20% increase
at the office
minimum in our business. Why? Because we're buddies and Paul's my man and he's on a great call, me today, you tomorrow. And it's just, how could I not? He's my co-pilot, Maverick and Goose. I mean, it just had to be. Paul's my man. Why didn't you quit? Paul, why are you the top guy this month? Because Paul motivated me. How did you get through rough times outside the office? Because I could vent with Paul at lunch. The day that you look in my face and go, hey, Richie, what's going on? And the only way you could see that is by sitting next to me. And then we have a moment, bounce the bike again. You get me back to where I need to be. And that could have only happened if you were there. And so don't think that that doesn't have a ripple effect.
No, it absolutely.
Months if it doesn't get stopped. And so, yes, Paul, am I being selfish by wanting to sit next to you and not having you do that commute? Of course. But then again, you have to weigh both options. But yeah, you hit it on the head, my friend. You hated Apollo in the beginning, Rocky. And then at the end, you talk to her every day and you respect her more than anybody. And it's mutual. And I think that's a very, very nice relationship to have.
Aside from COVID, can you think, 30 years, it had to have happened. Can you think of a particularly challenging moment, some point in time where in this career and in this business that you had to figure something out and you had to overcome it?
I guess it was the delegating the right people. I'm a guest here. I can't wear all hats. Really think about being a business owner. I mean, all joking aside, you need accountants and attorneys. I needed a chief technical officer. I needed general managers and human resources directors. And even attempting, like in Monopoly, just to put one or two houses on each property is not enough. How do you have the time to be an expert in each? How do you have the one thing that I'm great at is the watching the floor. So the general manager position I have the most experience in, and that is a double full-time job if you think about it. And so
absolutely,
you need to choose the right people. And the majority of the time I promoted from within. I have specialists for IT, but I've promoted individuals internally that were going to school for Cisco. And when the opportunity arose, I gave them the keys because the knowledge can be learned and I can hire people to assist, but I have a warrior with me that is as loyal as the day is long. And that fidelity to me really is the security of the company.
You can
same with the accounts.
You can't change their culture or their level of ownership or their attitude. You see that in the process. I agree with that 100%.
It's a weird situation because you need to show your vulnerability Because if I think, if I give this individual the impression that I know what I'm doing, that I'm plan B, but I'm not, or if I know how to press the red button and I don't, then there might be that time I need to do it and I can't do it. And so you need to be humble, and there has to be real transparency with certain individuals in order to make sure you're buying the right equipment and have the preparation. And I've also learned,
someone's going to say, you know what, I'm not sure if this is exactly what we need. That's a better statement than I'm 100% confident this is it. And it's not.
I'm the last person to even say that if it's not my department.
Right. Exactly.
Like even the lawyers here, I don't know the law. So if they're explaining something about a labor law, I have to accept that. But when it comes to budget, I may ask to shop around to see if I can get a computer cheaper. Sometimes I will pay more for convenience if there's a sense of urgency. And I'll always, even if it's a topic that's foreign to me, I'll always be the person to speak last. Let everybody talk first. Seriously.
All right. Well, then, in that vein, finally, what advice would you give to someone looking to start their own business in Costa Rica?
Hey, sell your soul. That's a beautiful idea. to start their business, well, you got to keep an open mind, because a lot of the things that you're used to back home in regards to efficiency, flexibility, I mean, things are closed on Sunday here. So there might be long lines at the bank. And don't think that your connections back home can do something here. You might need to start from scratch. Remember, you're a guest here. And don't be the loud foreigner. My second suggestion is to learn the language. Yes, a lot of people speak English here and they have the most neutral accent and a 95% literacy rate. But what about that 5%? You still got to get by. It's not James Bond time. And I think that if you accept what this culture is, which is pura vida, is pure life, it's very tropical. They're very much in the nature and they are very spiritual individuals. And as long as you don't, you know, you pick up your trash, right, you have your please and your thank yous and you show respect, you may have a wonderful time here with incredible memories. And so don't rush, okay? And if somebody is very quick to offer something to you, as I mentioned before, take their names and numbers and thank them, but then call them the next day. Okay, so you can
type up the email, just don't hit send. And then if you still feel like you want to send it, send it.
How many times do you change it? Plus you might find a spelling mistake. Yeah. So what are you going to do? Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome. This is a fantastic interview. I feel like I'm talking to a linguist expert. I got to step my game up. More conversations like this. I really appreciate it. This has been really great. But let's say somebody has a telemarketing need or someone is your potential client. Who is that and how can they get in touch with you?
That's a great question. I thank you very much for that. I have a very large Facebook fan page. They can go to CostaRicasCallCenter.com. But my clients are individuals that are looking for sales, appointment setting, lead generation, customer support, back office support, non-voice support. It could be a very large company to offset some of the work or just to compare apples. It could be just a small startup that might need one or two people to set appointments for someone because they don't have the time to.
So it's not just telemarketing. You're doing virtual assistants and remote workers as well.
Whatever somebody needs.
Got it.
And the only disadvantage is it's not home court, but you have the advantage of infrastructure and knowledge. I'm really proficient with script writing. I enjoy rhetoric. And so it's very easy for me to compare the other verticals that I had and the metrics that I had over longer periods of time, like a luxury of a track record, to actually show them patterns and to make those sort of suggestions. And it's not funny, but since I do enjoy, and you mentioned earlier about receiving telemarketing calls and in the industry, of course, they're colleagues and I like to hear people pitch. But when I get scripts sometimes, there is a misconception. I don't know if it's Hollywood or it's grandiose, but a lot of the times their scripts are written for people with credit card at the ready, waiting for their call, giving them 20 minutes.
I know exactly what you mean.
Come on, it's Grease Lightning. We got to clean her up a little bit.
Well, I work with law firm owners. I would read like the script that the lawyers would make for their law firms. And it's like,
yeah,
is your ideal client a law professor or a judge? Because it looks like you're writing script for either a law professor or a judge. You do criminal law. Law professors and judges need criminal representation from time to time. I would bet that's not your avatar. I would think some of the people are not relating to how you're coming across on your website. And that's like you're saying, scripts, nobody wants to be sold anything, but it's a numbers game. Some people need the help. Some people need to help cross that bridge, or some people need to delegate that decision. And that's what needs to happen. But it works if you're not interested in creating a craft, I guess. It works as good as it's as good as you're ever going to be on day one. If you can stay on script, you know, you may close like a blind squirrel finding a nut. You know, it'll happen, but it's going to take a whole lot more work than if you really get into it and understand it. And I love that approach.
Do you remember the song Help from My Friends that the Beatles wrote?
Yes.
Joe Cocker sang it at Woodstock. It's a little bit different than John Lennon. And so it's the same message, different delivery. And so it's funny you mentioned law firms. Perfect example. Wow, you hit that on the head. I work with a client that does, we do intake coordination for disability and wrongful termination. And so, yes, there are 10 questions we must ask to qualify. And these are tough, tough questions. But the islands, the bridging, the anchoring that we do is the empathy, number one. And secondly, repeating what you said to ensure you're not repeating it again, that I understand it, tied downing it by saying, yes, Paul, that does make sense, right? And then we move on. And so I can't do 45-minute calls repeat three times. We can do a good 15-minute call where we just slice and dice, let them vent, repeat the vent, put the bed. Next question. We rake. And so, yes, we are capable of doing that. And then I had a very, very difficult, it was a class action lawsuit. And we had to go through like 40 pages with people. And it was in regards to like an antipsychotic medication. So some of the people did not have, let's just say diplomatically, not the sort of attention span or patience for long phone calls. Sometimes we had to call people back. But could you imagine going through 40 pages of somebody and that sort of patience and timing?
I can also see the pure monetary value of having someone competent to delegate that task to, you know, that becomes the value of the work because
you're doing stuff
you don't want to do. I see it. Well, this has been fantastic. I am so glad that I actually moved the needle because when I joined the podcasting, I was looking to be a guest on as many podcasts as I could just to increase my audience, to increase my network, to build relationships. Within a couple of weeks, it was like, I'm fertilizing all these lawns and they're working. It absolutely works. You have an extended amount of time. It's like an infomercial versus a 30-second commercial. But what if all of this knowledge was helping me? So I wasn't 100% crystal clear on how it was going to benefit me in my business, but it has done so much. So I switched the lever.
Does it matter though, Paul? Can't we just do something non-commissioned and just for art's sake? Just put it out there. And if you do that, then it's definitely coming back in spades, you know? Not when you're looking for it, is when you meet the woman of your dreams.
That's
the magic.
That's very true. Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed this, like I said, thoroughly. And I wish you all the best. And thanks for being on Inappropriate Growth.
I appreciate it, Paul. I had a great time today.